The Fifth Kind. This video is in association with Portal to Ascension. Visit www.ascensionconference.com. For information on the upcoming 3-day Portal to Ascension Conference in San Diego, California, April 21st to the 23rd, 2023. Michael Cremo is a researcher of human origins and an international authority on archaeological anomalies. He has authored several books, including the best-selling Forbidden Archaeology, in which he argues the existence of humans on Earth as long as 40 million years ago. The Forbidden Archaeologist, Human De-evolution, Forbidden Archaeology's Impact, and The Hidden History of the Human Race, co-authored with Richard Thompson. Michael has been invited to present his research in some of the leading scientific institutions of the world, such as the Royal Institution of London, the Russian Academy of Science, the Moscow Department of Anthropology, the Indian Institute of Science, and many others. He also appears widely on TV shows, such as the History Channel's Ancient Aliens and the Gaia TV series Ancient Civilizations. His work in archaeology and research of the ancient Sanskrit writings of India has revealed a long and mysterious history of human origins.
The Vedas are the literatures of ancient India, and they give information about all kinds of topics, but I'm interested in archaeology in particular. And in India, you've got some amazing archaeological sites like the Ellora cave temples in northern India, where you have huge, elaborate temples like this one, the Kailash temple, carved out of solid rock. It's like a mountain of solid rock, and they just started carving out elaborate temples with columns and rooms, and it's just astonishing. And this is one of the interiors. So you've got this huge temple carved out of the solid rock there. And outside Delhi, there's this amazing iron pillar, which has been standing for almost a couple of thousand years. And it's not rusted or corroded at all, even though it's exposed to the weather. And then you have sites like Mahabalipuram in Tamil Nadu, where you have these elaborate rock carvings there. But I'm particularly interested in three questions. How old is the Rig Veda? How old is the Vedic culture in India? And how old is the human species according to the Vedic histories? On the question of the age of the Rig Veda, secular scholars say it is no more than 3,500 years old. Traditional Vedic sources give it an age of at least 5,000 years. And we've heard Nilesh give evidence that events and places mentioned in the Vedic literature, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, may be older than that. So question is, what is the real truth? One interesting thing in the Rig Veda is that it gives a list of the rivers in northern India going from east to west. And they are from east to west: the Ganga, the Yamuna, the Sarasvati, and the Sutlej. And this is a map of the current river structure in northwestern India. On the far right, circled in red, you've got the Ganges River, the Ganga, as it's called. And then to the immediate west of that comes the Yamuna, which comes down from the north and then flows towards the east. meeting the Ganga. And then next should come the Sarasvati, but there isn't any Sarasvati river there today. And then on the far left, you've got the Sutluj that comes down. So those rivers are there, but the Sarasvati is missing. This is another map of the same region. You've got, if you can see my cursor over here, there's the Ganga, the Yamuna, and then there's a dry river channel that sometimes fills up with a little bit of water during the rainy season. That's where the Sarasvati should have been. And then you've got the Sutlej over here, which comes into the Indus. This river Sarasvati is described in the Rig Veda as a wide flowing river that goes from the Himalayas down to the sea, the Arabian Sea, it's called. And there are satellite images that show the ancient river channel. And I've visited this ancient river channel. This was taken during the rainy season in the winter time in India. So you can see there's a little bit of water that's accumulated, you know, from the rain. But really, you've got this whole big dry river channel. And it, you can see it, it must have been quite a big river. You know, the banks are very high. It's very wide. And, you know, high banks on this side. So the question becomes, when you see this huge ancient river channel, when was it last a flowing river? Because obviously whoever wrote down the Rig Veda was seeing it as a big flowing river. And there have been some scientific studies that answer this question, when was that last a flowing river? You know, for example, I was at a couple of years ago, I was at a meeting of the European Association for South Asian Archaeology and Art that was held in Vienna, Austria. And Sanjeev Gupta, a geologist from Imperial University in London, was there. And he's conducted geophysical research in that area. And his opinion was the last time the river was actually flowing, was a big flowing river going down to the sea, was over 5 or 6,000 years ago. So if that's true, then the Vedic literature, Rig Veda, must be at least that old and probably older. And this is a matter of controversy in academic circles about how old the Vedic culture is in India. Some scholars today would say no more than 3,500 years. That's pretty much the consensus among mainstream scholars. But some say at least 5,000 and maybe more years for the present of the Vedic culture in the Indian subcontinent. During the time I was absent, having some little technical difficulties, you gave a bit of a review of what the mainstream idea is, that that culture that existed in the Indus Valley from about 5,300 to 3,300 years ago, they say it was not Vedic. There were not Sanskrit speaking or reading people there. There were people they call Dravidians. But you know, they say that the Vedic people, who they call Indo-Europeans, came later from the Northwest about 3,500 years ago. There are a few scholars who say that this Indus Valley civilization was, in fact, Vedic. So that's the question before us. Were the Indus Valley civilization cities before 3,500 years ago Vedic or not? Sometimes they call that civilization the Harappan, after one of the early sites that was discovered there. So, you know, there are various approaches to this. One difficulty is that the language of the Indus Valley civilization hasn't been deciphered yet. So at least it hasn't been deciphered in such a way that's satisfactory to, you know, a consensus positive acceptance by the scholarly community. So I've looked at another aspect for potentially identifying the cultural identity of these urban sites, and that is Vastu Vidya, which is the Vedic science of architecture, which includes town planning. It originates in the Atharva and Yajur Vedas. There are some references to this system. And my proposal is, if it can be shown that these Indus Valley or Harappan towns were in fact designed according to Vastu Vidya, this would show their Vedic cultural identity. So I selected one of the main sites, Lotal. It's on the lower portion of the green area. I've got my cursor on it, if you can see it. And the archaeologist who discovered this urban site say it existed between 4,400 and 3,900 years ago, and they don't consider it to be Vedic. You can notice it was considered to be a port city with a small harbor, and it was an urban area. So I went to Lotal a couple of years ago just to research the place. My methodology was to compile a list of features of a town planned according to Vastu and check and see if Lotal had these features. So the most common Vastu grid is a square or rectangle with the sides oriented to the cardinal directions, north, south, east, and west. So this is a Vastu Purusha Mandala, or grid, which is used for designing houses, temples, also cities or towns. And you see it's divided into different squares, which are inhabited. You know, those squares can be read astrologically or in terms of different gods or goddesses that inhabit them. And the central figure is the Vastu Purusha, who is considered in this form to be a stabilizing force. And of course, you want architecture to be stable. And we find that Lotal does conform to this standard Vastu grid, in that it's oriented towards the cardinal directions and it's a square, roughly a square. And the orientation is north is this direction here going towards the right, you know, from the left to the right. That's the north-south axis, with north being to the right, south being to the left. So it is a rectangular shape oriented towards the cardinal directions. This is, you know, this red outline shows its approximate orientation. And yeah, there's a comparison of it with the standard Vastu grid. Also, the individual houses should face the cardinal directions. They should be oriented in that way. And according to the Vastu principles, the roads should also be oriented towards the cardinal directions, north, south, east, west. And if we switch the orientation of the drawing, so we've got north and south going vertically and east and west going horizontally, we'll see that the main roads are running pretty much in the cardinal directions, and the buildings within the grid are also oriented towards the cardinal directions. You know, this can be seen here. Of course, they just have the foundations of the buildings now, not, you know, the complete buildings, but the foundations are oriented as they should be according to the Vastu principles. Another principle of Vastu design is that a town site should be higher in the south and west and slope down to the north and the east. So we actually see that the highest point in Lotal, this Lotal urban site, is in fact in the southwest. And the landscape does slope gradually down to the north and to the east. Yeah, this can be seen here. This is looking along a road and row of buildings going north, and it does gradually slope down towards the northern boundary of the site. This set of structures is oriented on land that slopes down towards the east, you know, from the west. A Vastu design principle is that wastewater should drain to the east. And at the site, the main drainage channel for the whole site goes to the east. And then they have these bathing platforms that run, that have places where the water runs from the bathing platform into a drainage channel, and that drainage channel flows to the east. Another principle of vastu design is that the different types of people doing different types of work would be situated in different parts of the town. The artisan area would be in the west, the merchant area in the south, the administrative areas in the east, and the religious or spiritual activities would be carried out in the northern part. So in Lotal, one of the main products they had was making beads from carnelian and other types of semi-precious stone. And these beads were a trade item. They were traded to as far away as Mesopotamia, you know, Babylon, Samaria area. So those areas were located in these artisan or bead making areas are in the western part of Lotal, where the X is marked there. That's where those sites are located in the west. And then there was a warehouse for storing goods. This was a trading center. So this merchant area was located in the southeast, where it should be, according to Vastu principles. This area is marked by the X mark there, that structure. Then the administrative area is in the eastern part of Lotal, as it should be, according to Vastu principles. There was a kind of acropolis there, which is interpreted by the archaeologists to be an administrative center. And it is located in the eastern part, the central eastern edge of the town. And finally, there were public fire altars found in the northern part of Lotal, which is indicative of ritual or spiritual activity. And that was one of the main activities, having fire altars and sacrifices. So those are found in the northern part of the city, there in that region. So my conclusion is that this Lotal site provides evidence that is consistent with Vastu town planning. And that would tend to indicate that the people inhabiting this place were of at least partially the Vedic culture. And therefore, the Vedic culture was present in India before 3,500 years ago, which, as I said, is when mainstream scholars believe the Vedic culture became present in the Indian subcontinent. I wrote about this particular case in chapter 44 of my book, The Forbidden Archaeologist. I visited a second Indus civilization site or Harappan site in northwestern India, the Dholavira site in Gujarat state. It's really interesting. It you have to drive across this huge salt flat. It's just amazing. You know, like this desert of salt. But then you come to Dolavira and you can see it was a monumental city. It had a very elaborate water storage and distribution center system, this is one of the storage tanks, and this is the outline of the Dolavira urban site in Gujarat. Again, we see that it conforms to a Vastu grid. It's a square, roughly, oriented towards the cardinal directions. And that's just an extension. Some of the walls are incomplete. And again, it conforms to the Vastu Purusha grid. So I think this methodology could be extended to other Indus Valley sites to see if they conform to these Vastu town design principles. And that could be one line of evidence that would help identify the cities and towns in the Indus Valley as having been part of the Vedic civilization in ancient India. So I think I've reached the end of my time. I'll just mention that the Vedic literature, this is my third question that I'm interested in, the antiquity of the human species according to the Vedic literature. And according to the Vedic literature, our human species goes back many millions of years, which is quite a different idea than that propounded by Charles Darwin and his modern followers, who say the first humans like us came into existence about 300,000 years ago, having evolved from more primitive ape-like creatures. However, the Puranas, the Vedic histories, tell of a much more ancient human presence on this planet. And of course, this contradicts the modern theory of evolution, although we could imagine a kind of evolution of the soul through the process of reincarnation. But there are temples in India that have very ancient histories, according to the local Puranas or histories. For example, the Sri Rangam Temple has a history that goes back, according to the traditional sources, much further than 300,000 years. So, that is located in the Tamil Nadu state in southern India. I visited there with an Indian archaeologist some years ago, and we were looking at the history of it. And our original goal was really quite limited, which was to show that it's been there at least 5,000 years and probably more. But according to the temple histories, it goes back at least to the time of the Ramayana. the main deity is a reclining form of Vishnu lying on a serpent bed and on the causal ocean. So that specific deity is said to have been worshipped by members of the solar dynasty in India millions of years ago, actually up to 20 million years ago. So I write about that case in chapter 12 of my book, The Forbidden Archaeologist. And of course, it's one thing to say that according to tradition, this happened, and according to the Puranas, this happened. But people sometimes wonder, is there any archaeological evidence that humans like us have been present on Earth for much longer than 300,000 years? And there is. I've documented some of it in this book. And it's not well known because of a process of knowledge filtration that operates in the scientific world, whereby evidence that conforms to the dominant theories passes through the knowledge filter, whereas evidence that radically contradicts it tends to be filtered out. So there have been some discoveries in the history of archaeology showing that humans like us have existed for millions of years, as the Puranas say. For example, we have a human skull from a human skeleton found by the Italian geologist Giuseppe Ragazzoni at Castagnetolo in Italy in layers of rock about 4 million years old. You know, I visited that village and I met this man there, and he gave me a copy of an old geological report about this discovery. And from that information, we were able to locate the site where this discovery was made. And sometimes scientists say, well, you know, you say you've got a human skeleton in a layer of rock 4 million years old. Excuse me. Four million years old. But really, here's what probably happened. Maybe 4,000 years ago, someone died on that level, and then his friends dug a grave, put the body down there. And that's why you think you found human remains 4 million years old. But Ragazzoni carefully considered that possibility, and he said, if it had been a burial, then the layers of rock above the skeleton would have been disturbed. But he looked very carefully when he was taking the bones out of the ground. He could see the layers of rock above the skeleton were undisturbed. So there are other cases like that. Carlos Ribeiro from Portugal discovered human artifacts and layers of rock 20 million years old. He displayed them in this museum in Lisbon, the Museum of Geology. But if you go there today, you won't see them on display anymore. They're kept locked in the cabinets behind me there. But I got permission from the directors of the museum to open up those cabinets, and I was able to study and photograph some of these artifacts. And I also, in the museum archives, looked at the original field notes by Ribeiro. And I was able to use that information to go into the countryside of Portugal and relocate some of the sites where he made his discoveries. And yeah, you know, these are some of the artifacts he found. Then we've got the California gold mine discoveries, where miners were digging tunnels into the sides of mountains in the Sierra Nevada mountains and finding human bones and human artifacts and layers of rock that modern geologists tell us are about 50 million years old. You know, for example, they found many stone mortars and pestles. They found them in layers of rock that belonged to the early part of the geological period called the Eocene, which means they'd be about 50 million years old. They were reported to the scientific world by Dr. Whitney, who was the chief government geologist of California. He published a substantial report about these discoveries, but they were rejected by scientists such as William Holmes of the Smithsonian Institution, who said, if Dr. Whitney had understood the theory of human evolution, he wouldn't have published that report, despite the imposing array of evidence with which he was confronted. I'll translate that into a little bit simpler English. Basically, what he was saying, if the facts don't fit the evidence, the theory, if the facts don't fit the theory, the facts have to be thrown out. And basically, that's what happened. But some of the artifacts from the California gold mines are still in the Museum of Anthropology at the University of California at Berkeley. They're not shown to the public, but I got permission to study and photograph them. And I also went out into the Sierra Nevada mountains and relocated some of the old gold mining tunnels where these things were originally discovered. So there's a lot of evidence that's consistent with what the Puranas say about human antiquity, namely that we've been here for far longer than 300,000 years. And I've spoken about these things in many different countries. My books are now in 26 different languages, including Russian. And you know, I once did a tour lecturing at universities all over Russia. They went okay, except at one place. I was scheduled to give a lecture, and some opposition developed, and they canceled the lecture. So we didn't hold the lecture at the university, but at the Russian Academy of Science branch in this city, they did hold the lecture, and they brought students and professors from the university to this other alternate place. And more people came than would have come if I'd given the lecture at the university. So that happens quite a bit. So these are the three questions that I was interested in: the age of the Rig Veda, the cultural identity of the Indus Valley sites, which I think can be shown to be Vedic in terms of the evidence for Vastu principles being used in town design of these sites. And then the antiquity of the human species, according to the Puranas. So I want to thank you for this opportunity to make this presentation at this virtual conference on the Indus Valley and ancient India. Thank you.
Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind. Please check out our official website at fifthkind.tv. This video is in association with Portal to Ascension. Visit portaltoascension.org for access to thousands of interviews, conferences, and live events.